Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind, coming to you from Longmont, Colorado. I'm your host, Mark Troutman. This educational personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. Well, over the past few weeks, I've been moving out of my Crested Butte apartment that I maintained after I sold my house and am now fully entrenched here in Longmont. I was asked to continue teaching the financial literacy class at the Crested Butte Community School to the high school this year, so I will definitely be back and forth for that. And I was able to secure accommodations for that time, so I have no issues there with housing. So that's a good thing, because housing there is not the easiest thing to come about. In the last episode, I talked about my plan to do Roth IRA conversions up to the top of the 24% tax bracket and gave you all the reasonings why I was doing that and kind of showing you how I do things at the end of the year. And I also mentioned that I would be giving up any Affordable Care Act or ACA subsidies that I might have been able to receive if my income was much lower. And I still plan to do that, and that plan is currently underway and in progress. However, I have been reading the new book that was just released by Sean Mullaney and Cody Garrett entitled Tax Planning to and Through Early Retirement. And they have presented a pretty compelling argument against kind of my thinking on this approach. Their logic is to maximize ACA credits or subsidies in early retirement. So those pre-age 65 years, at age 65, you would go on Medicare, for example, and to utilize potentially low income to receive subsidies. And they give a number of compelling case studies in the book. Even with someone that might have a significant amount of assets, it would be to their advantage to defer those conversions until after they reach Medicare age and do those conversions in the window between age 65 and the required minimum distribution age, which for many people now is 75. So there's this window between age 66 and 74 where you can do more strategic Roth conversions, let's say, or even just withdrawals to live on, and still take advantage of the subsidies that the ACA offers. After kind of going back and forth in my mind on whether it makes sense to get the subsidies or ignore them and do conversions and putting pen to paper, or I guess you would say mouse to spreadsheet, I have looked at it as it's intriguing, and I haven't come to a final conclusion yet on whether it makes sense. I think it really is a personal decision for everyone, and it depends on a multitude of factors. Normally, what I would do is if I was choosing to do Roth conversions in a year, let's say, I would do some early in the year, the idea being that you can move money from your traditional IRA to your Roth IRA and start earning tax-free income, whether it's capital gains or interest or what have you, on that capital as soon as possible, instead of waiting until later in the year. And then later in the year, in the fourth quarter, doing a top-up conversion to really dial in wherever it is you're trying to land in the tax brackets, let's say. Given their thought process being fairly compelling, I have decided for 2026, I'm committed to doing what I discussed last episode for 2025, but for 2026, my thought is to not do the conversions until the end of the year, which gives me all year to ponder this question, which is really just an optimization question, you know, should I, shouldn't I? Instead of doing some conversions earlier in the year and setting the stage for a limited number of choices that I might have at the end of the year. That brings me to where we stand today with the ACA subsidies. So there are a number of big changes that are slated to go into law, I guess you would say, in 2026 that are very different than the current landscape here in 2025. So I want to go through some of that and explain that, because it's gotten some press and you're seeing articles saying that, oh, people's insurance rates are going to go up significantly as a result of this, but there hasn't been a lot of discussion on exactly why. And it's true that if the current legislation, which is slated to expire at the end of 2025 and revert to the prior kind of rule set, there will be some significant increases for people who are receiving ACA subsidies. The other thing that will come into play is what's called the ACA subsidy cliff, and we'll talk a little bit about what that means. So let me backtrack a little bit and explain exactly how all this works. Where we're going to go to in 2026, and this is assuming they don't make any last-minute changes and extend this. That's kind of why we have the current government shutdown. The two parties are at loggerheads over should they or shouldn't they extend the ACA subsidies as they currently exist. The Democrats are basically saying it's going to be very difficult for people who are on the exchange. Their costs are going to go up substantially, which is very true. And the Republicans are on the side of, hey, we want to lower the deficit and keep costs in check. And they are reluctant to extend it. So that's really where we stand right now. And that's really why the government is continuing to be shut down, because the two parties can't come to an agreement. So we'll see where all that lands. But we're going to look at it from the standpoint of where it stands today. The expiration is currently in place. We should know more pretty soon, because open enrollment is on November 1st, which is only, as of the date of this recording, a few days away. So while I guess they could retroactively change things, I think that's a pretty significant date, because people are going to need to know, well, what are these costs and what are they going to be? So let's dig in a little bit to this, and I found a really good reference document that I will link to in the show notes. It's from a website called healthreformbeyondthebasics.org, and they have these reference guide sheets that you can see going back many years, and I'm going to be referring to the one that says 2024 guidelines with the coverage year of 2025 and the 2025 guidelines with the coverage year of 2026. So looking at how it exists today, so in the current coverage year, so for people who are receiving insurance through the ACA for 2025, this is what the landscape looks like. And I would encourage you to go to the show notes and open this link, which will be the yearly guidelines and thresholds coverage year 2025 reference chart. So as it stands right now, the way this kind of works is there's something called the federal poverty level or federal poverty guidelines. And depending on where your income falls in relation to the federal poverty level for your household size, and household means anyone that is living under your roof and is, in essence, on your tax return. So if you had a dependent child, let's say you were a two-person household with a dependent child, let's say two children, let's use that as an example, I'll say a household of four, the 100% of the federal poverty level for 2024, for the coverage year of 2025, is $31,200. So that number is significant because everything is a multiple of that figure. If you're a single household, it's $15,060. So the way this works is typically for most states, you're going to need to have at least 138% of the federal poverty level to avoid being on Medicaid. Typically, if you are under the 138%, I think in some states it might be 133%, you are in essence forced or should be on Medicaid. So if you're going to be on the exchange, the Affordable Care Act exchange, your household income would need to exceed 138% of federal poverty level. And then there's different brackets, 150%, 200%, 250, 300, and 400. So let's just jump all the way to the extreme right and look at 400% of the federal poverty level. So for a single person household, that's $60,240. And let's use this same example of the household of four. That would be $124,800. So that's kind of the cliff, the line for the cliff. Prior to 2021, when the enhanced premium tax credits were enacted as part of the American Rescue Plan and later extended with the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, there was a cliff at the 400% level. So effectively, if your household income exceeded that 400% of federal poverty level, you would not be able to receive any subsidy. But with the enhanced premium tax credits extended in 2021 and further in 2022, that cliff went away in essence, and it just kind of was a glide path past that. And I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but this is how it works. So currently, if, for instance, your family is at the 200% of federal poverty level, so a household of one would be $30,120, a household of four would be $62,400, you would be expected to pay 2% of your household income towards health coverage. That's basically how it works. If we go to the 250% level, which for a single household would be $37,650 and a household of four of $78,000, you would be expected to pay 4% of that. At 300%, it goes to 6%. And at 400% and above, because there's no cliff, it's 8.5%. So effectively, you're expected to pay those percentages of your income towards healthcare. Now, what's interesting is if you were at or below the 150% federal poverty level, but obviously above the 138%, you would be expected to pay zero. So there are some households who are paying zero for their health coverage under the current plan, and that is slated to change. So if we look at the expiration and what will go into play for 2026 forward without any changes from Congress, it changes quite a bit. So the federal poverty guidelines, and this I would suggest jump over to the next reference chart, which is the yearly guidelines and thresholds for coverage year 2026. The federal poverty guideline is a little bit higher. It's for a single household, single person household, it's $15,650. And for a four person household, it's $32,150. And then you can just multiply that number by 1.38 to get to the kind of the line for Medicaid, which would be for a single household, $21,597, and for a household of four, $44,367. And then if you're looking at the chart, you'll see other columns for 150%, 200%, 250, 300, and 400. And these are the kind of breakpoints for the coverage percentages that each household would be required to cover for their insurance. What's interesting is if we look at the 150% federal poverty level column, that would be $23,475 for a single person household and $48,225 for a family of four, their required contribution, remember, it was 0% previously, right? Up to 150% was zero under the current situation. Next year, assuming nothing changes, it goes to 4.19%. So that household that was paying nothing for their health insurance on the exchange would go to 4%. So for that, doing quick math in my head, which is always dangerous, might be, what, almost $2,000 for that household of four towards their health expenses when previously they were paying zero. So that might be a pretty significant hit for that household. So that's kind of what's happening. Now let's go a little bit further down the line. And under the current guidelines for 200% of federal poverty level, it's 2%. Going forward, it would be 6.6%. So effectively, it would triple in cost for that household that's at 200% of federal poverty level. And that's household of one, $31,300. Household of four, $64,300. That's a pretty big jump. And at 250%, which is currently 4% of household income, that goes to 8.44%. So a doubling there. And then for 300% to 400%, which currently is in the neighborhood of 6% to 8.5%, it will go to 9.96%, or literally just shy of 10%. So that household of one at 400% would be $62,600, would be expected to pay 10% of their household income, or $6,260, for healthcare, and the family of four at $128,600 would be expected to pay almost $13,000, whereas today they are paying substantially less. The other thing is the cliff comes back, and that's a big factor. So if you're a household of one, that 400% federal poverty level of $62,600, if you make $1 over that, you are ineligible for premium tax credits. So that's pretty significant for those that are trying to manage their income to get some subsidies. So at $62,600 or less, you get a subsidy. At $62,601, no subsidy. So that's pretty significant. Now, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if this is just going to remain in effect or if they're going to make some changes. Are they going to maybe not have the cliff come back? Are they going to make some adjustments to the expected premium contribution as a percentage of income? I have no idea. It's very interesting to see how this will all play out. But what that means is if you have the ability to manage your income, it's going to be potentially even more important next year than it will be for this year and the prior handful of years under the current system. So like I said, it remains to be seen where this goes, but you kind of have to work on the fact that this is intended to expire at the end of the year. And the chart that I was referencing, which is the one that says coverage year 2026, is the one we should be probably working with until any change that may or may not happen comes down the pike. So that's pretty significant. I wanted to go back to what I'm planning on doing for next year. So I'm going to give you a little insight into my current situation. I think I've mentioned that I am a widower. I am currently or will be receiving in 2026 survivor benefits on my wife's record. You can do that as soon as age 60. I will switch to my own record at age 70. And Social Security is potentially taxable up to 85%. What's kind of intriguing with this whole little math exercise that I've been going through is that if my income remains under a certain level, my Social Security could be taxed at a lower rate, as low as potentially zero. And as an early retiree, and that is the focus of Sean and Cody's book, is that you have a lot of levers as an early retiree to kind of manage your income, and more so than somebody who has a W-2 job. And that's a blessing and a curse, I guess you would say, because you don't have the income. But for me, there is a possibility that I could manage my income so I receive Social Security and not much else, because most of my financial assets are in IRAs, combination of Roth and traditional. And my taxable accounts or taxable brokerage accounts and savings accounts don't throw off a significant amount of interest. So my income could be as low as my Social Security and my interest income alone, which potentially would put me in a position to pay very little tax on my Social Security, no tax on the interest income because that would fall within the standard deduction, and potentially receive a subsidy on my healthcare. Now, I can decide not to do that and do a big Roth conversion and go to whatever tax bracket I choose. But the alternative is, if I do that, then my Social Security would likely become fully taxable, or 85% of it, and I would also lose the subsidy, and I would obviously be paying the graduated tax rates as I move through the tax brackets on the conversion. So that's something to take into account. It's quite interesting to see how many little levers there are. I'm not age 65 yet. If I was, there's the additional deduction that people over the age of 65 will get as a result of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that was passed on July 4th, which is also something else to factor in if you're in that age group. This doesn't affect me, but for those who are age 63 and over, you start to have what's called IRMA come into play, or the income-related monthly adjustment amount, which factors into how much you pay for Medicare. There are surcharges if you make more than a certain amount. There's a whole nother podcast that could be done on IRMA, but it's interesting. In Cody and Sean's book, they talk about IRMA isn't as big of a deal as the subsidies, for example. So it's kind of like, well, which one is worse, IRMA or losing the subsidy? So that's kind of something to ponder. So I really appreciate Cody and Sean coming out with this book. It has been very beneficial for me as an early retiree. I would highly recommend you read it. I will put that in the show notes as well. In fact, Sean is coming to the Mr. Money Mustache headquarters here in Longmont, and I will see him there. It will probably be either the day this is released or a couple of days prior to when this is released. I'm looking forward to that. It's a really, really good book, and I think they did a great job of putting it together. It's definitely for those optimizers out there, I guess you would say, and it is probably the most beneficial for those who are at or very near early retirement, and also anyone in retirement, I would say. And it's interesting because one of the things I remember reading at the beginning of the book, they were talking about, you know, you think of early retirees as people just in this kind of FIRE community, financial independence, retire early. But the reality is most people, or many people in the United States, retire prior to their 65th birthday, whether it's by choice or by force. And so many people in the country are effectively early retirees. So it applies to a lot of people. I commend both of you on writing this book. I know there was a lot of work that was put into it, and I think it's been very valuable read for me personally. And I've heard some great reviews on it as well from other people in the community. So good job. So like I said, to kind of wrap up here, I think what I will do is allow myself to not have to make this decision immediately. And I will just go ahead and receive my Social Security and my interest throughout the year, and then decide at the end of the year, which is also kind of their planning suggestion as well, which I agree with, is wait till the end of the year when you know all your income and you can see a full picture of your situation and make those decisions that you can choose to do or not to do, such as a Roth conversion, toward the end of the year. So that's my plan for 2026. I've put that in my one-page financial plan, and I am going to move forward with that approach. I will keep you abreast on how all of that pans out. I will also likely mention whether there are any changes that come about from Congress as a result of maybe extending the current guidelines or current expected premium contribution amounts, or removing the cliff going forward. But I'm not sure, given the state of the two parties, I'm not sure that anything will come out of it. And maybe we just get to the end of the year and expiration is what it is and it just stays. So it's definitely something that you should be looking at. It will be interesting to see when open enrollment starts on November 1st, how all of this is coded into the system, I guess you would say. I'm assuming they're just going to code it with the expirations because that is the current law. And they will make adjustments if there are any changes. So if you are shopping for insurance on the exchanges, don't be surprised if you see some pretty substantial increases in your expected cost for that insurance, given the changes in the subsidies and the cliff, and also just general inflation of medical costs. So, you know, even if you pay full freight, understand that there may be some significant increases in just the cost of insurance as a result of healthcare inflation. So it'll be interesting to see how this all pans out. I hope you have a wonderful Halloween, which is coming up. So enjoy that. One of the things I like to do at this time of the year is, and I don't know if my neighbors are listening or neighbors' kids are listening, is I like to give out the full-size candy bars. So if you're in my neighborhood, stop on by and get the full-size candy bars. And I source those from Sam's Club and Costco, who frequently put those 30-piece boxes on sale at this time of the year. And it's kind of fun to be that house that gave away the big candy bars, because I always enjoyed that when I was a little kid out there trick-or-treating. So yeah, stop on by if you're in the neighborhood. Happy Halloween. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people find the content in their podcast players. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend the show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next time on the Mark's Money Mind show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. Now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur, so please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.